I am fully responsible. This is Dr. Herbert L. Byerly, Dean of the University of Healing here in Campo, California, with a thought for today. I am fully responsible. A lot of times we get into discussions and conversations where we talk with people who say they're not responsible when they're drunk. They're not responsible when they have brain damage. They're not responsible when they're mentally unstable. They're not responsible for their lives and their actions and their ways. And this is not true. At all times, we are responsible. At all times, whatever we do, we are responsible for what the beginning was and what the outcome is. We'd like to say that we're not responsible because some conditions in the world have brought these things about and we had to face them. We say accident, and we know there are no accidents. Everything happens because causes were put into motion and events follow. We say that people who are mentally ill are not responsible for what they're doing, and science is finding that this is far from the truth. People are always responsible for what they do, even when they choose to think that they're mentally ill. What they have done is they have given themselves an escape route to escape facing life that they could not face, to escape facing problems that were just too big for them, that were just too all-encompassing for them to handle. This is not to say that they are now competent, they're now able to do things, but it's saying that all along the way we make choices, and these choices sometimes invalidate our ability to continue to make choices. What do we want to do? How do we want to look at life? How do we want to be responsible at all times? Even when people are drunk, they're responsible. They're inebriated. They are, so to speak, out of it. But even at that time, science has found that people truly are responsible. First, they knew what they were doing when they did it, when they were drinking and making their brain inebriated. And secondly, they found out that when people are inebriated, they more likely are what their natural self would be, uninhibited, because the inebriation seems to take away the inhibitions that make man less than what he thinks he should like to be. If we would like to be our true self, if we would like to be the ideal self that we are, we need to at all times be on top of it. We need to at all times be uninhibited. And mentally you say to yourself, golly, oh, if people would go around being uninhibited, there'd be some pretty strange things going on. No. People are uninhibited who are living their highest and their best. We inhibit ourselves and make ourselves think that we are being cheated out of some of the values of life. We make ourselves think that we're being cheated from some of the experiences of life that other people are having that are so good, and so we feel negative toward those experiences and those people and ourselves, and we create an inhibition which causes us to be negative. Now, most of the time we think about inhibitions as something beneficial to help us to get along in the world. We are inhibited from doing things that we might naturally do to protect ourselves. And we recognize that there's nothing to run away from, there's nothing to run to, there's no escape. And so we stand by and we meet the circumstances straight on. But this is an inhibition that is a negative inhibition, and we have learned to call it a positive inhibition. So long as we go into life, and so long as we go into all of the experiences that we're into, and think about them, that they are in our inhibited side, that we have inhibited ourselves from doing things which would be harmful to ourselves, harmful to others, doing things which would be negative to our experience on earth, and those inhibitions we think are beneficial. Well, our natural self, our highest and our best, our natural self is to at all times be loving, to be unconditionally loving. Our natural self is at all times to be our highest and best. That's our natural self. It's our unnatural self, if you could call it such a thing. Not beneficial, that's for sure. When we go around inhibiting our natural self, our highest and our best, we inhibit our highest and our best when we think we want something that someone else has. We think that we want to do things that other people are doing because it looks like fun. We think that other people are stronger, better, and more intelligent than we. And because we think that, we are sometimes negative to them. Why would we be negative to someone who was expressing and showing forth the things that we feel are good and desirable? Well, that's a good question, isn't it? And it seems illogical that we would be negative toward people who express the very features that we feel are valuable and good. But this is something we have trained ourselves in. We have trained ourselves to be in sort of an anti-logical point of view, an anti-realistic point of view, an anti-worldly point of view. In truth, all things are good and beautiful. In truth, there is only the highest and the best, and that is all we will ever know. We find it fun to go after other people's ideas. Oh, we love to read books, and we love to talk with other people about philosophy, and we love to dwell in a world and say maybe ifs and would-be's, whereas these things are really not our reality. Our reality is to be the highest and the best. Our reality is to be the genius that we are. Our reality is to be the maximum being that we are. I have talked about the term God many times, and in discussing the term God, it seems that every deity that is a capitalized God is the deity of a given religion or a given philosophy. And this is not the universal deity. The universal deity is a small g, and the wind is a small w, the universal wind. A north wind is capitalized. Wind as a universal is lowercase. And God as a individualized, deityized point of view for a given faith is capitalized. And as a universal God, it is lowercase. Now, why is this even something we think about? Why is this something that gives us importance? Well, we trouble ourselves with the definition of terms. We trouble ourselves with thinking of how things are defined and how things are looked at. We delight in reading another man's philosophy and saying, oh, it is so good, it is so beautiful, it is so significant, it is so wonderful, it is so fulfilling, it is so rewarding, it is so uplifting. And then we look at our own philosophy and we say, well, that's pretty good too, but not as good as this other guy, because this other guy was great. Well, now, the greatest difficulty in all philosophy, the greatest difficulty in all ways of thinking, is that it's beautiful and easy to talk about it, but it becomes a little more special to do it. When I say, I love my neighbor as myself, I love my neighbor and I look at him and I see him doing good and beautiful things. I love my neighbor and I realize all of the magnificence that he is. And then I have an opportunity to do something with my neighbor, and while I'm doing it, I notice that he does it a little differently than I do. And so I judge him, and I say, he does it differently than I do. And I say, and that's not too cool, because my way works so beautifully. Why doesn't he do it my way? And with that judgment, I have now set myself aside from the philosophy that I seem to say is mine, the philosophy that I seem to pretend to follow, unconditional love for myself and my neighbor. Judgment is something that happens to us so spontaneously and so easily because we have allowed it to take control that it is just something that is going to overwhelm us. And we will feel that we're not responsible for that judgment because that has come from our past experiences. Well, think about it. How does judgment come into being? Now, you say you want to learn to play the piano, you sit down and you practice. You say you want to sing, you practice. You say you want to do anything, you practice. All right, you say you want to be non-judgmental. Look at everything in the world, or look at anything. And as you look at anything in the world, can you look at it without judgment? Can you look at two countries that are fighting against each other for whatever their reasons are? And can you love them, and can you allow them to be beautiful beings, and can you see there is now peace on earth, and it began with me, and these two countries are at peace. These, and they're fighting their heads off, and you say, oh boy, they better cool off. Don't. And you see, we get away from the idea of non-judgmental. We get away from that. We get into that aspect of judging because we see the outward appearances and the outward effects. To bring it closer to home, we might say, okay, I am spiritually illumined. And then you have a circumstance that comes into your life and says, hey, a spiritually illumined person would not act in that way. And you say to yourself, but I am spiritually illumined. And then your inner voice says, yeah, but a spiritually illumined person wouldn't act that way. Well, what do you mean now? Give me an illustration. Let me know what you're thinking about. All right. You are seeing what's going on in the world. And you see people in some parts of the world who are limited and who don't have enough food to eat. And as one queen said, give them cake. Well, we know that's a foolish thing. When people are starving, people are starving. And when people are starving, the only thing that helps them is to give them food. And so, how do we give them food? How do we recognize them as not starving any longer? How do we think about people who are starving as not starving? Because they're starving. Now, if you haven't gone through an experience of starvation, and very few people have, if you haven't gone through that experience, you don't really know what it's like. You don't really know what it's like when your body gets less energy and your body gets less food to vitalize it and take care of it. And so you say to yourself, there's abundance. People all over the world have sufficient food to meet whatever their needs are. People all over the world are abundantly blessed with food, are abundantly blessed with all the substance that they need to live a happy, joyful life. Now, you say, but that's not true. These people are living this lack of abundance. They're going through this starvation. Well, what can I do to help them besides going and giving them food and giving them money and giving them things? What can I do? Well, this is the test of our personal responsibility. We are the creators of the world, and we created those people with lack of food. Oh, come on now, we did not create them with lack of food. We don't even know them. We probably don't even know the countries, that don't even know the names of the countries, much less the names of the people who are starving. And how could we have created them, and why would we ever create anyone starving? Well, by the very fact that we know that thoughts are things, and by the very fact that we put a cause in motion to say that somebody somewhere is starving, we are empowering that thought. We are empowering that activity. We are empowering that limitation for those people and ourselves. And you say, well, come on now, it doesn't work that way. It doesn't work that way. Well, how does it work? Are you responsible or not? Are you responsible for every thought you think? Are you responsible for every idea that goes through your mind? Am I responsible for all of these things? I surely am. Would you say that I was an ugly person because I thought about the starving people on earth? Would you say that I was a terrible, evil person because I thought of people who have illnesses? Would you say that I was an evil person because I thought any negative thought for anybody, anywhere? Would you say that? You could, you know, and you probably are perfectly right in doing it. But we are responsible, whether we like to take the responsibility or not. A person who has a mental problem, you say, well, they had that from childhood, or they had this or that. All things are from somewhere. But if they lived in a family that were able to was able to encourage them to be more positive, encourage them to take responsibility, encourage them to enjoy life and to delight in themselves, that would disappear. Mental instability is not permanent. Mental instability is not brain damage. Mental instability is not anything other than thoughts that have gone astray, thoughts that have taken possession of us, which we don't want to do, and yet we give it the power to do it. When we talk to people, when we bring them back to their senses, how can you bring them back to their senses if it's something that is unrepairable? How can you do that? Well, because it is repairable, if you can say that. It is returning to your original purity and integrity. It's returning to who you are and what you are. Now, are you willing to do that? Or are you going to constantly say again and again and again, I got a problem, I got a problem, I got a problem, and constantly have that problem again and again, and expect people to be sorry for you with that problem? I've worked with an awful lot of mentally ill people who have had problems. And the people who were mentally ill, who chose to come back, who chose to step out of that past negativity and into a positive attitude for themselves, they were the ones who healed themselves. They were the ones who returned to their original purity and integrity, and they did it. But they didn't do it by hanging on to the past. They didn't do it by hanging on to what is the past. And we don't help them hang on to the past when we are working with them. When we're working with someone who wants to gain freedom from poverty, freedom from limitation, freedom from illness of any kind, we don't talk about the illness, we don't talk about the past. If we do talk about the illness and we do talk about the past, we empower that to be. And unfortunately, many people love to talk about their limitations. This is where psychiatrists and psychologists have such a great heyday, because, and ministers, because people like to talk about their problems. And these men who are, and women who are trained in their field, talk with these people about their problems. They don't say to these people, all right, let's talk about how you will have a solution, how you will put a new cause in motion, how you will handle these things. Let's say to these people how to do that. Okay, So you say that to those people. Those who really want to do something about it will work with you. And I've had many people work with me who really wanted to do it, and they enjoyed the wholeness. And then there are others who didn't. They just loved waddling in their unhappiness. They just loved dwelling in their imperfection. They just loved dwelling on that. And they didn't want to step out of it. Oh, they kept reading other books. They kept going to other teachers. They kept going to other ministers. They kept going to other practitioners of various attitudes. And they found that the compassion and the sympathy of the other practitioners and the other people who work with them, who give stories about what they want to do, make them feel good for a time. And then that too wears thin. And then they go to another, and to another, and to another. And forever they're always going to other practitioners, always going to other philosophies, other ways of talking and thinking about things. And when they stop, and when they stop, and when they face who they are, and they come to the realization that who they are is something very special, and it's just that they have to service the car the way it's intended to be serviced. You have to put gas in the car if you want the car to run. In you, you have to put positive thoughts if you want your life to be a positive, beautiful, uplifting life. What is the measure? What is the fuel of your life experience? What is it that you must do? What causes must you put in motion, must I put in motion for the wholeness of my life? Can I allow myself ever to see anyone ill, anyone in poverty, anyone with a problem of any kind? Many of my students come to me and say, I got a problem. And I say, well, good. You want more? Oh, don't be so stupid. Well, what do you want? I want to have a solution. Well, then let's talk about solutions. What kind of solution would you like? I want to be completely free of that. Well, there you go, back in the problem again. What do you want to be? You don't want to be free from something. You want to be free in something. You want to be free in your open, harmonious mind, in your unconditionally loving way. You want to be expressing the divinity that's within you, the magnificence of you, the wonder of you, and see all the world doing the same thing. See all the world in love, in peace, in harmony. See all the world a reflection of the goodness, the magnificence, the wonder, and the magic that's within you, and you can do it. You can do it, and you will do it, but you won't do it if you keep going out of yourself looking for the answer. For in all things, the answer is within us. Peace on earth is within me. Every person on earth who would like to be whole and perfect is in me. For I see every person on earth whole and perfect. I see every person on the face of this planet and all planets, anywhere I can conceive of a planet with people on it. Every planet, people are abundant. People are living to their highest and the best. People are expressing their divinity. People are expressing the wonder and the magic that they are. They're being the allness that they are. They're being all that ever can be. And when they do that, wow! Could anything be more magnificent than that? Could anything be more exciting than that? Well, I doubt it. I am fully responsible. And being fully responsible, I decide what it is that makes my world go around. And what makes my world go around is that I'm fully responsible now and always. And I like me, and I like me, and I like me. And my beloveds, I love you. I love you. I love you.